Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and this is the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about a couple of shows that just recently finished up with their respective seasons. I'm, of course, talking about Ms. Marvel and The Boys. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone to please follow the show on all social media pages so you can get updates on upcoming episodes, geek news, and also interact with yours truly. So follow me on Instagram and TikTok at the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast, at Mean Joe Grizzly Pine on Twitter, like the official Mean Joe Grizzly Facebook page, and last but not least, join the Mean Militia on the show's official Facebook group, the Mean Joe Grizzly Mean Militia. I look forward to interacting with y'all, and also make sure y'all subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. But let's get started. This is Grizzly. You know what, guys? This episode was supposed to come out on Monday, so it got pushed to Wednesday, and now it's bumped till Friday because it's been a long ass week at my day job. I've worked my ass off. I kind of just want to kick back, relax, crack open a beer, and just talk about these two shows. So let's switch it up a little bit. This is Brews and Reviews. Alright, let's get this started. So, Ms. Marvel wasn't that bad at all. It gave us this great coming-of-age story for a character that is very unfamiliar to general audiences. And that was its biggest hurdle that it was going to have to overcome. And honestly, just like with the major characters of the MCU, Disney has had a significant challenge with making fans care about some of these characters, especially the more obscure characters. I mean, even characters like Iron Man and Thor wasn't always household names. In fact, for the longest time, Disney had to figure out a way to pitch the idea that Iron Man wasn't a robot, but Tony Stark in a suit. But even more so, characters like Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange were almost completely unknown to casual moviegoers. So when you have a character that's not only very, very new, with her debut in the comics only being less than 10 years ago, but also doesn't have her own current ongoing title, it could be even more challenging. So the other challenge is the target audience being pre-teen to teen. And it would no doubt expand the fan base even further, but also present a challenge of alienating other audiences. And I fall into this category, unfortunately, even though it doesn't completely lose me. It's not so aimed towards preteens and teens that it feels like some silly Disney Channel show shit, like some iCarly or some nonsense like that, but at times it's close. And I never felt like the characters were in any danger, like, ever. And this style is the reason that I never felt like these characters were in any danger, because it just seemed like this real happy-go-lucky, everything's going to work itself out in the end story, and that's not how it is in the comics. In the comics, there was times where Kamala was in very dire situations, and some of her friends were too. And also the villains, the clandestine. Now, this group was so obscure that even me as a pretty adept comic fan didn't know much about them at all. I mean, they're barely featured in any stories of relevance, but they have a few miniseries over the years and some cameos in a few characters' books like the X-Men, but for the most part, They're not widely known, and this show does not, they do not do a good job of developing them or making them seem like a serious threat. And at first I didn't think it would be an issue when they deviated from the comics and they used the clandestine instead of the Inhumans. But now I'm not so sure. I'm not a fan of the Inhumans. They're okay, but they weren't something that I really, really needed to see. But I think they work better than the clandestine do in this situation. In fact, I think the way that Kamala gains her powers by the use of the bangle is okay, but I think that her original powers in the comics would have been so much better, especially in relation to the season finale, that when Kamala is revealed to be a mutant. That's right, Disney and Marvel are finally confirming the existence of mutants in the MCU. And with that being revealed, her original powers would have had an explanation, and it wouldn't have been so hand wavy of an explanation as, oh, the bangle gives her this, you know, access to this energy from this other plane of existence or whatever. And quite frankly, we have no idea how Kamala's powers work with the bangle or what she actually is. Like, because there's a flashback in Kamala's, like, to Kamala's grandmother in India, and other than her death, nothing of relevance happened. Then the show, after the big face-off with Damage Control, the mutant reveal, and it's like, so is Kamala mutant, or is she clandestine? Is she both? Who knows? And maybe it will all be revealed in other seasons of the show or in the Marvels movie, but it's left pretty up in the air. And either way, the clandestine were just lackluster, to say the least. And even though they're setting up Cameron as the next villain like he was in the comics, it still doesn't really make a difference. I think the villain from the first run of the comics, known as the Inventor, would have been a much better villain, even though he was kind of ridiculous in the comics too. But they could have took the concept of that villain and put him in this show, and it would have worked so much better than the clandestine. And it actually would have been perfect, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, he doesn't have to be a robot cockatiel clone or whatever it was. Like, I think it was a robot cockatiel clone of Thomas Edison. And I go over that run in one of my earlier episodes, so go back and check that one out if you want to know more about Kamala Khan. But even though this show comes up short in those areas, it shines very brightly in other areas. What the show does capture perfectly is the family-centered themes of the comics, which is honestly the most important aspect of Kamala Khan's story, but also the coming-of-age story. And even though I think they capture it decently, it would have been even further enhanced if they would have kept her powers that she had in the comics. Her dealing with not being able to control her body and her struggling to tell her friends would have been so much better. Like, in the comics, Bruno does learn about her powers and everything, but he learns about it in a different way than he does in the show. It appears like her powers are a lot like Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four, where she can stretch, but it's so much more than that. She has complete body modification. Like, she can make her hand the size of a small house and crush stuff. She can grow to the size of a small building and stretch her arms out for a football field, and it's just crazy. She also can shapeshift, and she has somewhat of a healing factor too. When she transforms from one person back to her normal form, she heals. So she's got a lot of different powers, but she couldn't control them. So she'd walk down a hallway in school, and her hand would grow to the size of a Volkswagen, and she'd have to figure out a way to not let people see her. Like, it gave a different dynamic, and I think it would have worked so well in this show if they would have went with that. and her not being able to tell her friends and people respecting her and stuff like that, they kind of capture some of that, but it would have been better, in my opinion. And if you want to know more about her comic powers and the other differences, check out episode 25, and in 12 minutes, you will know everything you need to know about Kamala Khan in the comics. And you might see exactly what I mean when I say it could have been better. But now, let's get to the verdict. Although held back by lackluster villains, unclear character plot lines, and some unnecessary character changes from the comics, Ms. Marvel still manages to maintain and properly adapt the core element that makes the character special: family. That, paired with a solid coming-of-age superhero story, yields decent results. And with that, Ms. Marvel gets a 3 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. Now, let's move on to The Boys. Man, this season of The Boys was fucking awesome. It essentially gave us what I have been wanting from this show for a while, and that was finally introducing the concept of the temporary Compound V and actually have the boys fight toe-to-toe with superheroes. And although we didn't get it in the same capacity as it was in the comics, it was still refreshing to actually see them be an actual threat to someone like Homelander. And that's something I think the show's been missing. And yeah, they can't be completely accurate to the comics, because even though what you've seen this season especially was just completely outlandish and downright despicable with some of the stuff that they pulled from the comics, it's still the tip of the iceberg. The comics are so much more graphic and brutal and disgusting and depraved. The guy that writes the comic, his name is Garth Ennis, and all of Garth Ennis's work, all of his comics, everything that he writes is like this. It's this real cynical critique on whatever subject he's really writing on most of the time. And he's also responsible for writing books like Preacher, and there was one that was really batshit crazy called Crossed. He did Punisher Max for a while, and it was really cool. But he's just, something's wrong with that guy. That guy's got problems, and he shows in his writing. And the thing about with the temporary Compound V is, in the comics, all the boys take it. Like the female in the comics, she doesn't have like superpowers on her own. She's just a badass, and they all take Compound V, and it makes them all on par or comparable to Homelander. Not that they can fly, or that's one of the big differences in the show, is that when Butcher takes Compound V, it gives him like the heat vision and superhuman strength and stuff. But in the comics, it just makes them really, really strong and durable and able to actually fight hand to hand with these superpowered individuals. I think that the first team that they actually face off against was a teen team called like the Teenage Kicks, and all of them take like the temporary Compound V, and they go and they tune these guys up, man. Like, they actually kick their asses and stuff. And that's the thing, is that their whole goal, the big thing that's been lost in the show, is it's all been focused on Billy Butcher's like revenge against Homelander and them taking down the superheroes. But in the comics, it's a little more broad than that. They're actually a team that is contracted by a branch of the government to keep superheroes in line. And that's the thing. Vault America has so much power in both the show and in the comics that they're not working with the government completely. there are people in the government, in the intelligence agencies, that are actually trying to take Vault down. And that's where Billy Butcher and the boys come in. They are there to keep the Supes in line. And the way they keep them in line is by taking the temporary Compound V. And there's, it actually works so good that Huey, in the comics, he's facing, when they're in the, this big brawl, he's facing off against this one hero, and Huey panics, and he actually punches a hole through one of the teenage kicks and kills him. So it's like, it brings this level of, it levels the playing field. Like, it, it allows them to be a threat to the hero. So it was really refreshing to see them finally bring that in. I think they waited too late to do it, but it was refreshing to actually see it happen. So that paired with introducing Soldier Boy, which they took that angle in a little bit of a different direction as well. Jensen Ackles did great. I think Jensen Ackles is, was perfect for that role, just like I think Anthony Starr is perfect for Homelander. I think it was good to bring them in. Their dynamic, their fight, that one episode where it's Billy Butcher, it's Billy Butcher, Soldier Boy, and Huey fighting Homelander at Herogasm. And we'll talk about Herogasm in a second. But that fight was so badass. I had been waiting for that this entire time that this show's been running, because we haven't really seen that. We've seen Starlight and A-Train fight, and that was okay, and a couple other things here or there, but nothing on the level of, man, they're kicking Homelander's ass. You know, it's just that that has, that was something that never came until now, and I'm so glad that they finally took it to that level. As far as like everything else that transpired in this season, I think that they killed the chance to have the whole Black Noir twist like they did from the comics, because in the comics, Black Noir is a clone of Homelander. If you haven't read the comics, you wouldn't know that, but he is a clone of Homelander, and he's like a psychotic clone of Homelander that somehow Vought, I can't remember exactly how Vought keeps him in line, but he essentially was a huge plot point in the story, because he was actually the one who raped Billy Butcher's wife and not the actual Homelander. So, and him and Homelander actually fight too, and it's brutal as hell. So it's one of those things where it's like they switched all that up and it's working for the show. So it's not really a big disappointment for me. The show itself is great. The only thing that it, to me, like I said before, that it was missing was these good fights between the heroes and the superheroes. It was just something that they never did. It was just, the boys were always running. They were always on the defensive instead of going on the offensive, and that's something I'm glad that they got away from with this season. But the other problem is that I don't like the Compound V putting so much of a time constraint on things, with Billy now having X amount of months to live going into the next season and stuff. That just, to me, that's kind of unnecessary, because I feel like it's going to take away the big dynamic from Billy Butcher in the comics. Because Billy Butcher in the comics is not a good person. He's not a good person in the show. He's really not a good person in the comics. He is a piece of shit. And that is an understatement. And he ends up being just as bad as the heroes in the end. Just as bad as Homelander. And that's the thing, is I think they're gonna like martyrize him with putting this time, this death clock on him, and I don't know if I'll care for that. But it didn't take away from what the season, like Herogasm. So in the comics, Herogasm was actually, it's really funny, because with events that are happening in the real world, Herogasm in the comics was like this location that Vault would send all the superheroes for R&R to kind of recharge their batteries. and it would happen like once a year or once every so many years. But what would happen is the seven would hold like a, they would hold like this press conference and say, there's an alien invasion coming, or there's a threat coming from the underworld, or something outlandish that superheroes have to leave Earth to go fight. And they would take off and they would go to Herogasm, and Vault would fly in sex workers from all across the country and pay them hundreds and thousands of dollars for like this week or weekend or whatnot, where the superheroes would just go in and just do anything they wanted to these women. And it was horrible, but the way they did it in the show makes a lot of sense too. I do wish that Vault's hand was in it a little bit more. They've kind of taken Vault out of the mythos a little bit and put them in the background a little bit, kind of making Homelander the main spectacle, which is fine. But Homelander rebelling against Vault was a huge part of the comics, because at one point Homelander just tells all the superheroes, he's like, why are we taking orders from Vault or anyone? We could just rule the world. And they actually try to take over the world. So it's one of those things where I think that they're kind of doing that in the show, but I feel like that it's at a lower scale, and Vault not having a presence in everything like they are in the book kind of holds it back a tad, but not much. They are involved in everything in the show, but not in the depravity. They're more involved in covering up all the depravity, but in the books they are actually responsible for most of the depravity because they provide it, if that makes any sense. But the way they depicted Herogasm was perfect. It was fine. It didn't have to be anything different, but it kind of would have been a little cool if Vault would have been involved just a little bit. But regardless, I think the season was great. The opening episode of this season alone was just ridiculous. Like, the guy shrinks down, climbs the other guy's dick, and then sneezes and expands and kills the guy. That is probably, to me, that's probably the closest they've gotten to just the ridiculousness that the comic has. Like, this show was great. It's definitely a refreshing take on superheroes, and kind of gives this real world perspective of, if superheroes are real, this is exactly how they would be, because people aren't good people. And that's the thing, is for every good person you have 10 shitty ones. And that's Garth Ennis's stance on everything, that if they really was superheroes, none of them would do good things. They would do shit like this. And I think he's right to an extent. I think there would be a couple of good ones, but the people who would abuse it would dwarf the people who would do good. And that's just part of life. So I think this show is headed in the right direction. I think it's been solid so far since it first aired in season one, but I think they really took it to the next level with this season, and I hope that they continue to escalate and to get more and more closer to the graphicness of the books, because sometimes that's a little too much. Sometimes the graphic stuff is just there for graphic sake, if that makes any sense. But I think it works in this universe, and I think it works for Amazon for them to keep slowly ratcheting things up. And I'm looking forward to seeing more fights between Billy Butcher and the boys and the superheroes. I'm looking forward to more of that. Oh, I almost forgot. I really like the fight between Homelander and Queen Maeve. That was freaking brutal. He pokes out her freaking eye. It's just wow. Like, that's, like I said, that's what this show was missing to me. Like, all the fights would be just over in seconds, but there was actually brutal fights in this season, and I loved it. So far this year, and the year's halfway over, this is the best superhero show that aired this year. And if I had to give like a top 5 list of superhero stuff right now, it's in the top 3. If I had to give like a top 5 list of superhero media that has released this year, it's in the top 3. Maybe it might, let's just say it's definitely makes the list. It definitely makes the list. But enough about that. Let's get to the verdict. Season 3 manages to push the envelope in every way, which results in the best season yet. The Boys works the best by reaching ridiculous levels of depravity, violence, and insanity, and this season proves that. The Boys Season 3 gets a 5 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. And with that, we're going to bring this episode to a close. Thank you all so much for your continued patience and support of the show. Without y'all, this would not be possible. I kind of decided at the last minute to make this episode a Brews and Reviews episode. I did an episode like this once before when I reviewed Army of the Dead, Spiral from the Book of Saw, and Mortal Kombat. It really was just me sitting around drinking beers and talking about movies, but I might do something different with it in the future, but this week it just sounded very appropriate to have a Brews and Reviews episode, considering I've had 2 delays because of my day job, and of course being financially secure is the only way to survive in this life, so my day job's always going to come first. But I don't know what I want to do with Brews and Reviews yet. I don't know if I want to make it like my riff track type review episodes or what, so still kind of figuring that out, but just felt like it was very appropriate to have a Brews and Reviews after this hellacious week. So I hope y'all enjoy it. It's nothing really special. It's just a little theme that I do sometimes. I want to give a shout out to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio for the amazing background music and my music that is used for my intro and my outro. That guy, his work is amazing. Check him out on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music. He's just about on every platform. Go check that guy out. Does great work. I want to remind you once again to like and subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. Follow me on all the social media pages. And I think the next episode is going to be my review of Jordan Peele's Nope. That's coming out. It's out now, actually. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be coming your way more than likely on Monday or Wednesday, unless I have another crazy week at my day job. So we're going to get through this together, guys. So thank you all so much for your continued patience and support. And remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.